Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming out. How's everybody doing today? Great, 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 great. Glad to hear it. Guys, we've had these church seminars. We put them on the calendar, and if we come up with a need, if we see a need, we're going to have them. If we don't, we're not going to have it necessarily. And so we decided, based on the needs of where we're at right now, we needed to have one right now. And if you paid any attention, I had to go ask Alan officially the title. But it's called Money in Ministry, correct? And that's what we're here to talk about today. Now, for me personally, I really don't like talking much about money with the church. I just don't. I believe that's probably just because of the atmosphere in America, you know. And, I mean, people outside of churches, they look at all churches as just wanting to get your money. And there are churches that are that way. That's just the way that is. And so guys, we want to look at it today. We want to look at what's going on. I mean, you guys have probably known. Most of you that are here today are, I don't know if you'd call them core members or committed members or serious members, whatever you want to say. You guys pay attention to what's going on around here. And over the last several years, we've had financial needs in a couple different times. I know Alan's wrote a series of letters over the last 3 years, just explaining our needs. We've resisted the urge or the desire, you know, to ask people to make commitments and examine what they're given. And we've tried to take the strategy of just letting you folks know what the need is, letting you know what God has to say. And that struggle continues. There's just no two ways about it. There's no second guessing it. You know, earlier this summer, we didn't write a letter. Some of you knew that we had to have certain size contributions or we were not going to be able to make our building payment. And we don't like that. I don't know how else to say it. And Alan will talk a little bit more about that in the second session. And today we have two simple sessions. The first one I'm going to be talking about is how God uses resources. When you look at the Bible, how does God utilize resources? And then secondly, Alan and Mike are going to be up here talking about how we, as a church, are presently using the resources we have. What do we do with that contribution that comes on Sunday? And, I mean, there's some, guys, just in all honesty, we're not where we want to be. Is that fair to say? I mean, we would like, one of the things we'd like to see different, is we'd like to see us have a more of a missions approach, more money given to helping other people outside of Greater Alton. Now, I know it's exciting. I was told twice this morning by Kathleen and my wife about the Discoveryland kids collected like $290. Is that right?
Yeah.
For the kids in India. And that's exciting to look at, guys. You know, look, there are needs a whole lot bigger than what we have right here in other parts of the world that we can help with. And we want to be a church that does that. We want to be followers of Jesus that just aren't just focused on our dreams, our visions, our desires, but on the kingdom. And that's what we want. So guys, today I'm going to be talking about how God uses resources. Now the quick answer to that is however He wants to. You know? He's God and He does what He wants. And that's the truth. You look at it, he says that, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. But guys, when you look at it a lot deeper, there's a lot more to it than that. He can do whatever He wants. Have you ever wondered why He doesn't do things differently? You know, you're hurting. You're financially in need. You have a real problem that may not even be your fault, though it may be. Most of the time it is, right? And we go, God, why don't you just send us a trickle? You know, why don't you just give me those winning lottery tickets? I only need five matching numbers, not six. You know, why doesn't God do it that way? And sometimes when you look around and you see other people, especially people who aren't following God, and they have resources, and you go, God, why aren't you doing that? And there are some real... God doesn't just leave us out there blind as to what He's up to. Okay? He's probably not going to send you a text message or an email explaining you directly to your answer, because he explains just we need to seek Him out. And so guys, when you look at what way God... I'm going to give you a very generic answer to the question, and then we're going to delve into it a little deeper about how God uses His resources. I just said He uses them however He wants. He uses them to achieve the purpose He desires. I mean, that is it. That's a generic answer. I know that. Yeah, guys, and it's challenging. It's a challenging reality to know that there's a God who does things for His purposes, and we don't always know what those are right away. In fact, we may not know what they are till after we go through a certain set of circumstances. And guys, it's challenging to know His purposes and to acknowledge them, and even more challenging to accept them. And that's just the way that is. See, guys, the sad truth is, all of us have a view of God that is tainted and shaped by what goes on around us. You know what I'm saying? I mean, all of us, in this country, it's rare that you'll find a person whose life hasn't been exposed to a church somewhere along the line. I know that those people exist, but they're rare in America. Most of us have had contact with the church in some shape or form through our lives. Now, as we know, churches don't all teach the same things, do they? They don't all do things the same way. And so when you look at that, we're all going to be shaped by our experiences. We've all been... Has anybody ever taught something, was taught something about God as a child, and you later realize that was wrong? You know? A lot of stuff. That continues for me. And it wasn't all taught to me as a child, I'm sorry to say. But guys, when it comes to looking at God, we've got to look close. Because too many times, and especially when it comes to money and resources, churches have picked out certain passages, looked at what they had to say, and they use that passage to achieve their purpose. Sometimes they're trying to motivate through a vision or through a dream or through a plan. Other times they're trying to guilt you. Other times it's just flat, they're motivated by greed. If you ever get a chance to sit down and talk to Denise Davison sometime about a church that she attended when she lived in, I think it was up around Peoria. But she was talking about, they had a thing, you know, special contributions, right? We've had special contributions around here. We've had them to plant the church at the Crossings. We've had them to purchase the land for this dome. We've had them to build the dome. We've had them because we need to pay our bills. They had a special contribution. I believe it was once a year. And they were challenged to really sacrifice big. And the contribution was on Founders Day. And you know what Founders Day was? They have celebrated the founder of the church, the guy that started the church. And guess what the special contribution was for? Him. And when they didn't meet their goal, he chastised them for it. I mean, that's craziness. But guys, when you look at money and you look at resources, there's no way anybody in their right mind, as far as I'm concerned, can justify that type of an action thing going on. I mean, I know what Paul told the Corinthians about a worker is worth his wages, and don't muzzle the ox. I understand all that. People working in the kingdom of God need to be taken care of. But I think that's a stretch of it. So guys, we have to look and see what's going on. You see, guys, another one of the pitfalls that I see in America today in churches is what I call the franchise system. Okay? And what it is, and this is where church is influenced by America. Okay? We see right now we can see the result of this explosion of franchise businesses. There's very few true mom and pop restaurants anymore. They're franchises. Why is that? Well, because the franchise says, hey, we've got it all figured out. We know it works. You put up the money, do what we tell you, and boom, you're successful. Boom, you make money. Boom, it's good. And churches, a lot of them have taken that approach where they say, where either there's one church telling a group of others, hey, we figured it out. We know what's going on. Look, you look at our results. You can have these results. Let us give you the ingredients. Let us give you the system, the structure, the steps. You stir it all together, and boom, you'll have the same result. And look, and I mean, this is the way businesses do it. Look, here, not only did it happen with us, here, let's hear from somebody else who followed us and followed our pattern, and now they're successful. The only problem with that, guys, is when I look through my Bible, I don't see that.
Right.
Okay? I don't see that. In fact, when you look at the Old Testament, and I love the Old Testament, okay, one of the first things that Robert Cox taught me was two verses. One was Romans chapter 15 and verse 4, and the other was 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and 11, chapter 10 and verse 11. And both passages are saying the same thing. They're talking about the Old Testament Scriptures, and it says the things that were written in the past were written to teach us, warn us, and encourage us. You know, they're there for a purpose, to look at and to see what's going on. And when I look at the Old Testament, and I look at God using His resources, He did a variety of things. I mean, He did not work. You look at His formula. Well, let's look at God's formula, if you will. Okay? Well, how did He do it? One of the greatest victories in the Old Testament was the parting of the Red Sea. I mean, you read through the Old Testament, they constantly point back to the parting of the Red Sea. What preceded the parting of the Red Sea? And why was that such a tremendous victory? 430 years of slavery preceded that. That's not a pattern I want to follow. God, bring about great victory. Okay, let's go get enslaved for 430 years. And you see that happen a little bit later on when the Jewish people are taken into captivity by the Babylonians. You see that a little bit, but that's the only other time that goes on. You don't see a pattern of that. You see sometimes God works in a way when He's leading the people through the Promised Land, and they get to Jericho. And you guys know the story. If you don't, go read it. It's in the book of Joshua. And He tells the whole nation of people to march around the city every day for 7 days. And on the seventh day, they march 7 times and they blow their horns and the walls fall out. That's pretty cool. He never did it that way again. He never did it that way. With Gideon, you know, what did he do? He whittles them down. Gideon's got an army. It's a small army. And God whittles it down to 300 men. And he goes out there and they have, pots. A trumpet and a pot with a torch in it. That was their deal. And basically, they scared the enemy into killing themselves, killing each other. He never did it that way again. He never told a leader to go down, go have your men go drink water and see how they drink, whether they put their face in the water. He never did it that way again. He did it differently. And guys, you can go on and on and on. You know, with Goliath, he used a little boy. We don't see that again. In 2 Chronicles 20, he tells the whole nation to get involved, but they don't go march around the enemy. He just tells them to show up for battle. And they do something that's never done before or again. They put the singers up front. And I guess they thought they were the most expendable. Is that? Guys, but God has all the resources available to Him. And in fact, my notes aren't real straight here. In Psalms chapter 50, verses 7 through 12. Let's look over there real quick. Beginning verse 7, it says, O my people, listen as I speak. Here are my charges against you, O Israel. I am your God. I have no complaints about your sacrifices or the burnt offerings you constantly offer. But I do not need the bulls from your barn or the goats from your pens. For all the animals of the forest are mine, and I own the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird on the mountains, and all the animals of the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for all the world is mine and everything in it. Guys, the point is very simple. God has the ultimate amount of resources to where He needs absolutely nothing from anyone. And yet you find him constantly doing things in a different way. And I don't have time to get into it. I encourage you sometime to go look at the miracles of Jesus and look at the different ways that he healed people. All right? Why some lady was just able to reach through the crowd and just touch the hem of his garment and be healed. Somebody else, he did it from a distance where they just said, give the word and my servant will be healed. And that's what he does. Another time, he makes mud with his spit and puts it on a guy's eye. I don't know how you got lucky enough for that one, but who cares? He was blind and then he got to see. Guys, God does what he wants because he has all the resources in the world. And he needs absolutely nothing from us. So if he has all the resources in the world, do you kind of wonder why God's people ever have a need? Why is there ever a need in the world? Because guys, just like we just said, God uses his resources for his purposes. A couple nights ago, Susan and I are in bed, lights out, timer set on the TV, and we get a text from Jesse. And it's in reference to Exodus chapter 9. I believe it's verse 16, where God says to Pharaoh, I've raised you up for this purpose, to show my might. And she's like, why did God do that? You know, why did God raise him up for such a bad purpose? And that at bedtime, you know? We talk about this in the daytime. Well, I'm sorry, Dad. This is when I read. But guys, he distributes them according to his purpose, according to his need. You see, why doesn't he just make them all available to us so that we can take care of the needs? I believe the ultimate answer to that, guys, is that he looks at what we need. I am a father, and I can tell you one of the most difficult lessons, the most difficult things as a parent to do is to allow your child to struggle. And let me go even farther. It's to allow them to struggle and to sit there and watch while you hold the resources to end their struggle. That is the most challenging thing as a parent. Why do I do that? Why do I do that? Watch my child struggle when I could save them from the struggle. Why do I do that? Because they need to struggle. That's all there is to it. And can I tell you, it's terribly inconvenient to do that sometimes. They need to learn, because someday I'm not going to be around. Okay, whether I'm dead and gone, or whether I'm just unavailable, or they live in another state or another country, I'm not available. And I can tell you story after story after story, how I watch my children struggle. And sometimes, guys, I mean, I do things, especially with the boys, because they work with me. And they've got something coming up, and I make them struggle. I give them tasks that I know that are going to challenge their abilities, is the best way to put it. And you know what's going to? I know what's going to happen. You know what they're going to do? They're going to ask me for help. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tell them to figure it out. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've done that, guys. That's the way God is with us. That's the way He does His resources. Why does He give them to some people all they need, and other people He lets them struggle? It's because of where they are at. The different stories we just looked at, the different things we just talked about, with the way he defeated Jericho, the way David killed Goliath, the way Gideon defeated the Midianites. Why did he take different ways? Guys, it is my contention, it is my belief that he did that because of what the individual needs were at the time. I mean, God's all wise. He's all knowing. He looks down at the problem. And He doesn't just think, I need to solve this problem. He doesn't just go, well, finally they've prayed. Finally they've put the right ingredients into the mix. Let me solve the problem for them. He looks down on His people and He says, what do they need? What do they need? I believe Gideon needed to see that, Gideon, I don't need you. And I can do so much with so little. What does that mean? If God can do so much with so little, that means you can trust me a lot. And guys, He looks at them and says, what are the needs of His people? And He deals with it on an individual basis. Guys, now when you look at us, well, let me say one thing. Guys, it is rare in the Bible that people had a problem, they just prayed, and God just boom, made it disappear. You know that? It did happen. Don't get me wrong. It did happen. But most of the time, it took some action on somebody's part. It required that they do things to get things done. But one of the things, guys, that you see is that when God says He requires something of people, one of the things He did is He has the resources. They're all available to Him. Instead of just sending them out there, God put the resources in the hands of the people. I mean, that's what He did. Alan was pointing this out to me, and I didn't dig real deep on this. I'm taking his word for it because I trust him. But you know, in the book of Exodus, I looked at the first part of the story, and you're probably familiar with this. On the night that they were the Israelites were released from Egypt and released from Pharaoh, God gave them some instructions, and one of the instructions was, you go to all your Egyptian neighbors and you take their stuff. Okay, I'm paraphrasing here. You go back and read it if you want to look at the exact passage. I encourage that, by the way. But He says, they plunder the nation of Egypt of their gold. They walk out. I mean, they're slaves. They ain't got nothing. Oh yeah, they do now. And later on, when they build the tabernacle, those were the resources that they used to build the articles that go inside the tabernacle. See, God didn't just... He gave it to them and then He expected them to give it back. He expected them to use it for His purposes, to achieve His purposes. He wants us to work together. Another situation like this is in Luke chapter 9, the feeding of the 5,000. Now, this may have just been a matter of good management, okay, and delegation. But Jesus is, you know, the five loaves and two fishes. And what it says, Jesus blessed them and He started tearing them apart. And, you know, they've started multiplying. But it says that He gave them to the disciples to distribute. You know, I think that may be just like I say, good delegation, good organization, you know, instead of Jesus doing it all Himself. But at the same time, guys, I think there's something for us to learn to it. God gives to us so that we can distribute where there's need. And guys, that's what I think you're looking at here. And when we look at our resources, guys, we have to ask ourselves that question. You know, guys, we live in America. You know, when you look at God uses resources to achieve His purpose in individual lives. All right? We live in America. What does that mean? We are one of the richest nations to ever exist. We have far more than we physically need to exist. I mean, far more. We can spend more. We have more. I mean, it's just amazing. I've been doing some reading on the Amish. Okay? And the drastic difference between what we have and what we worry about and what they worry about. I'm not holding them up, by the way, in that way. I'm just saying, there's just... You want to understand how much we have, go look at how the Amish live. That's all I'm saying about that. We have a bunch. How does that influence us? Let me ask you this. Do you think living in America with abundant resources impacts us in an ungodly way? I mean, we are constantly tempted with what? The desire for more. The belief that you should have more. The belief that you should go get more. You know, the American dream. I don't have an American dream. I want to have a kingdom dream. Okay, and that's the way I want to run my life. I don't want to sit here and go, "Well, I want to go make a lot of money and be financially secure and give my kids a big inheritance and make sure they have everything they want and they can go to an Ivy League school or whatever school they want and I'm setting them up for life." I want to set my kids up for life. But that has nothing to do with money. That has to do with there's an eternity out there and a kingdom that exists. And how I use my resources is going to influence that. And guys, we just want to look at this is how God uses resources. Guys, what do you think if God looks at Americans as a whole and He says, "You guys have way, you followers, you Christians in America have way more than you need. Way more than you need to exist." What do you think He wants us to learn from that? That's the challenge, isn't it? That's the challenge. I mean, I can say it very clearly. If it wasn't for financial need, I wouldn't depend on God near as much as I do. I can say that. I can believe with all my heart, God wants me to learn to depend on Him more. I believe He also sees that I need to learn how to give. I mean, when you have a lot, honestly, with the resources that we have in America, we get the opportunity to be like God, don't we? We get the opportunity to decide whether or not we are going to help people or not. What are we going to do with them? Are we going to be like God? You see, guys, I believe that's one of the reasons. Well, we shouldn't have all this much and we should just quit our jobs and go live out in the countryside on next to nothing. I don't believe that's it. I don't believe that's the answer. I believe God's looking and saying, "No, you have an opportunity to be like me in a way that other people don't. And that is to give out of your abundance. To look for needs and to give them." You see, guys, that's what God does with His resources. He has everything. He uses them to achieve His purpose. He looks down on individual situations and says, "I want to achieve something here." And it's not always the same thing, depending on who it's for. And then He gives resources so that we can meet those needs in our lives. Guys, that's how God uses resources. I'm done.
You're done?
I'm done.
You're done. Okay.